The climate crisis is now well underway. That is according to a group of well-known scientists. Their big picture overview was just published in a paper titled Earth at Risk, An Urgent Call to End the Age of Destruction and Forge a Just and Sustainable Future. Is it really that bad? Is there any way out of a hothouse disaster? From the School of Ocean and Earth Science and Technology, University of Hawaii at Manoa, we've reached scientist and interim dean, Dr. Charles Fletcher, often known as Chip. He is co-author of the April 2024 paper in the prestigious Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. From Hawaii, Charles Fletcher, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. It's great to be with you.
Your new paper begins saying the climate crisis is now well underway. Can we say that now scientifically?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, we could have said it 40 years ago. The release of greenhouse gas when we burn coal, oil, and natural gas, principally in the form of carbon dioxide, has been proven since the 19th century as a scientific process that traps thermal infrared radiation, in other words, heat, that comes off of Earth's surface after it's been warmed by the sun. There's no doubt whatsoever about this. And by trapping this heat, which would otherwise escape to space, we warm Earth's surface above what it would be without this effect, this greenhouse effect. And in fact, if we didn't have a natural version of this greenhouse effect, Earth's surface temperature, on average, would be below freezing, and life as we know it wouldn't exist. What we've done by releasing additional greenhouse gases beyond those that are in the atmosphere naturally is to promote this warming, to increase it in what's known as the anthropogenic greenhouse effect. And we have now warmed Earth's surface temperature of the atmosphere about 1.5 degrees Celsius, warmer than the pre-industrial period roughly 2 centuries ago. Now, 1.5 degrees Celsius may not seem like very much. It's a little over 2 degrees Fahrenheit, but in many areas, it's leading to observable shifts and changes in natural processes. For instance, we are melting the world's cryosphere. We are melting Greenland. That fresh water coming off of Greenland is floating on the surface of the North Atlantic Ocean, and it is slowing down a major current that is part of a global ocean circulation system that carries heat around the world. Fresh water melting off of Antarctica is doing the same thing in the South Atlantic. And by warming the air, we are also moving that heat into the surface ocean around the world, causing it to thermally expand, creating sea level rise. So we have shifted global scale ocean circulation patterns. We are driving global scale sea level rise. I can tell you that the Northern Hemisphere jet stream has become unstable. It has slowed and developed large meanders, which bring slow-moving deadly heat waves up into the temperate latitudes and also bring slow-moving deadly cold snaps, known as the Arctic vortex, down into the temperate latitudes, leading to record-setting cold temperatures and record-setting warm temperatures in locations that damage food production, that lead to human health issues. And that's just the beginning of the global scale damage that we see, all with roughly 2 degrees Fahrenheit of warming. And we are on track to hit 3 degrees Celsius or over 4 degrees Fahrenheit of warming. The danger associated with that is very significant. And scientists are deeply worried about this.
Well, as Canadian author Leslie A. Davidson said, we are not lost. We are going in the wrong direction. How is the energy transition going, and what happens if the fossil fuel civilization continues to expand as now?
Yeah, I like that quote. We are not lost, but we are going in the wrong direction. And our paper takes a similar attitude. It's not a doom and gloom paper, and we state that in the opening paragraphs. We just are focused on calling attention to these problems. Now, It's not just about climate change, though. The paper makes it very clear that we actually are faced with five different global emergencies. Climate change is one of them, but also pollution, disease, biodiversity loss, and social inequality. And all five of these interact and overlap with each other. They tend to amplify their effects mutually. For instance, climate change has driven poorly resourced communities, lower income communities, deeper into poverty, and disease is expanding. We have dozens of new pandemic level diseases over the last 50 years as we have destroyed forests, especially rainforests around the world, but also we are thawing out tundra, releasing pathogens that were in equilibrium with the deep natural environment and had not moved into human communities. So we need to get a grip on all five of these emergencies. And yes, climate change is especially featured in the paper. To correct this problem, we need to amplify our efforts at reducing our dependence on fossil fuels. There are several steps that we recommend, one of which is that we engage in rapid and legitimate decarbonization and correct market distortions that favor fossil fuels. There are many government subsidies for fossil fuel companies that lower their cost of operation in order to keep the cost of the product that they provide affordable for us. But by keeping fossil fuels affordable, we are simply prolonging the danger that burning them creates. And these market distortions do not take into account the extreme weather damage that global warming is producing. Last year, in 2023, the United States experienced a record number of billion-dollar extreme weather disasters. And we see record-setting heat waves, forest fires, and intense rain bombs occurring around the world. A proper accounting of the cost of fossil fuels would take into account the cost of these extreme weather events. It would also take into account the cost of the human health impacts that unclean air produced by burning fossil fuels, and also human health issues related to heat waves and extreme weather events, are drawing on global economies. The cost of fossil fuels doesn't accurately reflect the cost that they have on human society. And so we need to properly price these fossil fuels, and by doing so, we will make them increasingly expensive. We can do this in a way that is not a shock to the economy, and further drive our shift towards clean energy in the form of hydro, solar, wind, and other types of clean energy, geothermal, for instance.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Dr. Charles Fletcher from the University of Hawaii. We're talking about a clear-headed paper titled Earth at Risk, An Urgent Call to the End of the Age of Destruction and Forge a Just and Sustainable Future.
We need to get a better handle on these economic tools, and we need to move away from this concept of net zero as an excuse to continue greenhouse gas emissions. Many companies are purchasing into the carbon offset market as an opportunity to continue burning fossil fuels as part of their operations. But when you examine the carbon offset market, we find that many of these carbon offsets really lack substance. They are not robust, and we have very little verification, reporting, and monitoring going on with these carbon offset contracts. They are really, in most cases, operating simply as excuses for companies to continue relying on fossil fuels. We know what the tools are that we need to apply here. The critical thing is convincing governments to take these steps.
Well, I agree, but I'd like to add another dimension to all this that you do cover in the new paper, and that's population. While humans continue to add more billions to our numbers, people like Elon Musk and many news pieces worry we won't have enough people. We're headed for population crash. Where did your group come out on population and the climate emergency?
Population is one of the key features that is driving Earth at risk. We spend a bit of time talking about the population issue. Several studies point to the holding capacity or the bearing capacity of planet Earth with regard to human population. And we make the point that our population has exceeded the capacity of Earth's natural resources to continue to sustainably provide us with what we need for life. The solution to overpopulation is female empowerment and education. And study after study shows that promoting gender justice by supporting women's and girls' education and rights reduces fertility rates and raises the community standard of living where these justice steps are taken. We still have a number of patriarchal societies around the world. The majority of societies, in fact, are this way. But the solution to population explosion is to give women autonomy over their own fertility choices. And we promote that quite strongly in this paper. You know, the five emergencies have their root in three fundamental issues. One is overpopulation. The second is that we have developed an extractive relationship with nature. And this global economic model based on profit and wealth accumulation is founded on this extractive relationship with nature rather than a truly sustainable relationship with nature. And the third issue is a long history of colonialism and imperialism fundamentally. Now, imperialism is when one community exerts its will on another community. And we've had four or five centuries of colonialism, slavery, indigenous erasure in many, many nations as the post-colonial era took place following, well, largely in the 20th century, and colonies from European conquerors were returned back to local governments. The indigenous lands were never returned to indigenous communities, but instead new governments that were stood up took control of these lands, and they are selling the lumber, mineral, soil, agriculture, and water rights out from underneath the very people who know how to sustainably manage these lands, local indigenous communities or local communities writ large. So population growth, imperialism, and an extractive relationship with nature based on an economic model of profit and wealth accumulation are the core issues that need to change. And we promote a cultural shift, and we list several steps that need to be taken globally in order to move away from the underpinning of the five global emergencies.
Chip, you've researched and published papers on the intersection of rising seas and coastlines. What is the situation in your Hawaii?
Oh, well, our research on sea level rise has revealed a number of interesting phenomena. Many people think that sea level rise is simply the ocean coming up over the shoreline, and indeed that is true. But it also turns out that the water table under our coastal communities is rising with the rising ocean. Here in Hawaii and from our research, we have learned that many other coastal communities around the world, the water table sits around the high tide level as an elevation, approximately the high tide level in the ocean. Now, many coastal communities are only a few feet in elevation above high tide, and a few feet of sea level rise is very likely to occur this century, bringing the water table up to the land surface in these communities. Now, when the water table breaks through the land surface, it's called a wetland, and wetlands and urbanization do not get along very well with each other. As the water table rises, we find roads beginning to experience decay and cracking and breakage, buried pipes and other types of infrastructure that carry fresh water and sewage and electrical and communication networks that are buried experience changes in their environment as the water table rises. We also find that storm drains that are designed to carry runoff when it rains out into the ocean instead carry salt water up onto the roadways in a phenomenon known as storm drain discharge. And then when it rains, we have what's known as compound flooding. And if it rains at high tide, we already see that the water table is high, so there's very little dry soil to soak up the rain. The storm drain systems, the drainage systems, are backed up with salt water, and so we get flash flooding that takes place in our urbanized communities with pools of water forming on the roadways, preventing traffic from passing. And when this happens during rush hour, it breaks up families. Very often, members of a family trying to get back home after their jobs have ended at the end of the day are stranded due to this urbanized flash flooding. And you have people at home. Perhaps you have children. Perhaps you have the elderly. You have folks that need medical attention that are recuperating at home. They are left abandoned. The whole thing radiates through our community with severe consequences. This is only going to get worse. We see this situation already taking place today. We are modeling these impacts. We are producing online maps for government agencies and engineers to see where the flooding is going to be worse. And we're working with government agencies on developing new policies and procedures so that as sea level rise continues and grows worse, we don't continue to experience the worst versions of the flooding.
You know, I have to tell you, I've interviewed several scientists and authors about sea level rise, and you've just given me some perspectives that I had not heard before, so I really appreciate that. On another topic of food, guests on our program predicted it's only a matter of time until two or more breadbasket regions lose their crops to heat or drought or floods or new diseases as the climate shifts. And this is a huge subject, but how would you summarize the coming food emergencies?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. That is a huge problem. I believe that unless we get a stronger momentum globally on cutting our fossil fuel emissions, we are going to see communities that grow the food starting to hang on to the food locally, less likely to ship it. And if they do, it's going to become much more expensive, and they'll be shipping the worst versions of their food. The breadbasket failure issue is not just about wildfire or heat waves or severe flooding. It's also about the loss of micronutrients that occurs as the level of CO2 in the air increases. We see that the four cereals, wheat, rice, soy, and maize, lose micronutrients, zinc, iron, vitamin B complex, and their proteins get replaced by carbohydrates, so they grow more sugary. This impact leads to micronutrient malnutrition around the world. So the coming food crisis is very severe, and we are very concerned, especially in Hawaii, where we only have a standing stock of food that would last us less than 2 weeks, because we're very dependent on ships and airplanes that bring us our food every single day. And there are many communities like us around the world that depend on other people to grow food for them. So this is, you know, one of the several things that will lead to community displacement and the growing tide of climate migrants that is already well underway on the planet.
And your team writes, quote, "The authors of this review believe that humanity stands at an inflection point in human history that will determine many characteristics of future life on Earth," end quote. Are you suggesting we need a change in human nature? How deep does this change have to go to succeed?
I think human nature is already prepared to tackle this problem. What we need is to shift our cultural values. We need education and sustainability and equity concepts, beginning with the very earliest grades in all schools on the planet. We need policy, legal frameworks, and legislation that mandate sustainable practices and ensure social equity. We need economic incentives to shift the economic focus from growth at any cost to a model that values environmental and social well-being. We need cross-sector partnerships where the public, private, civil society, and academia develop integrated and comprehensive approaches to sustainability and equity, community empowerment and inclusion, corporate responsibility and accountability, financial incentives for sustainable and equitable behavior, innovation in technology, leadership, cultural narratives, global engagement on this issue. We list all of these in our paper, and fundamentally, they add up to a cultural shift in values away from a growth, profit, wealth-oriented economic global model to one that recognizes Earth is our lifeboat in the cosmic sea of space. We are consuming and polluting the biophysical basis of our own existence. No one's coming to rescue us, and we're on the edge of a cliff that we need to back away from immediately if we're going to maintain a world where future generations can thrive and prosper in the way that we have.
You know, it's interesting. Rob Hopkins, the founder of the Transition Town movement, or a founder of it, has gone on to teach the key role of imagination, and that's what he writes about. And I wonder, hearing the things that you just proposed, which we all in our good selves would love to see happen, if some people are tuning out and going, well, it's just so bad now, it could never happen, is the human situation so hopeless even good people shut out hope?
It is true that there is a growing movement of doomists. I'm well aware of them. However, I don't believe that we are past hope. I think that the feeling that the doom and gloom community has is actually grief. They need to continue to engage. The solution to grief is action, which brings optimism, and time. You must let time pass and not give up. It's not really about hope, which sort of puts the emphasis on someone else solving the problem. It's about optimism, taking action, communicating what we know, not giving up. We cannot give up. There are children at risk here, and we must continue to change the cultural narrative of humans' relationship with planet Earth for the children. I'm aware of the problem that you're describing, but I don't think that that's the solution.
In one part of the paper, you say we're in a state of climate purgatory. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, climate purgatory means that nearly every nation has pledged net zero emissions. They have promised to cut their greenhouse gas emissions sufficient to stop global warming at 1.5 degrees, keeping with the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement. But at the same time, when you examine the nations of the world, actual investments in energy infrastructure and policies, you find that they are investing in fossil fuel infrastructure at a rate which completely violates their pledges for net zero by mid-century. And several studies have quantified the actual policies and investments around the world by governments and shown that it puts us on a pathway of nearly 3 degrees Celsius before the end of the century. And at 3 degrees Celsius net warming, models tell us that about one-third of humanity will be displaced by extreme weather, expanding desertification, reductions in food and water security. Communities on the march lead to global security problems because they come up against political boundaries. So that's what climate purgatory is. We've made promises, but we are not investing in the promises. We are instead investing in fossil fuel, the growth of fossil fuels.
And we seem to be at a kind of focal point of change where scientists are talking more about abrupt climate change than they used to. It used to be science was very, you know, incremental and slow, almost glacial, but now there could be abrupt climate change. And at the same time, people like Dr. Tim Lenton from Exeter talk about human tipping points, that we could have social tipping points where we get things change socially much faster than we thought possible. Do you expect both, and can we cope with both?
Yeah, the tipping point concept tends to grab everybody's attention. So it's alarmist in nature, and I don't mean that in a negative way. We are conjecturing through the use of physics-based models about tipping points with ocean circulation. We conjecture about tipping points with tropical rainforest, especially the Amazon, which has now been damaged to the about 18% of the Amazon has been damaged. And some of the biophysical models suggest that by 20% damage, it will cross the tipping point and move into savannahization simply because the Amazon runs its own hydrologic cycle. It makes its own rainfall. And by removing one-fifth of the trees, you sufficiently damage the water cycle that it's unable to support the rest of the forest. It'll be interesting to see if these physical or biophysical tipping points take place. With regard to cultural tipping points, I think that these are true. I look at it as a positive thing. I think there's been such amazing advancements that have taken place in the last decade or two, and we've seen amazing shifts in cultural viewpoints. Hopefully we can see a sustainable future and that fossil fuel uses are immoral. Hopefully that cultural tipping point will take place as well.
Well, we're running out of time here. Wrapping up, what happens to Earth at Risk now? Who can use it, and do you see it as a continuing assessment in coming years, possibly?
Yes. A number of our authors are using the paper to develop curricula. Krista Heiser, who is a professor of English language here at the University of Hawaii. Phoebe Barnard, who is with University of Washington and University of Cape Town, South Africa, has been working on talking points and curricula. We'd like to see more of our authors and, in fact, more of the public use this paper to underpin teaching and education around the world. Education, of course, takes many forms. One example is what we're doing this morning. And I hope that people who are concerned and read the paper will use the paper to write their own op-eds. We need the word to get out and to expand. I think that by reading the paper, folks will become more educated on these issues, and then they need to talk about what they know and what they have learned. The paper is setting some records for public digestion. It's in the top 5% of all research outputs scored by a standard metric called Altmetric, which looks at all online uses and references to the paper. It has been viewed about 19,000 times, and we have almost 2,000 downloads, downloads of the PDF of the paper. So many people are engaging with the paper, and we need them now to speak up about it and spread the word.
And we'll do just that. From the School of Ocean and Earth Science and Technology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa, we've been speaking with scientist and interim dean Charles Fletcher. He is co-author of the April 2024 PNAS paper, Earth at Risk, An Urgent Call to End the Age of Destruction and Forge a Just and Sustainable Future. It is open access. It's free for anybody to read. You can find a link to it and to follow up more in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. Chip Fletcher, thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thank you, Alex, for all that you do. I really appreciate spending time with you. Stay safe out there.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org. Free for all. ecoshock.org.